We have gathered on this occasion to honor the memory of Srila Satchidananda Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who is a most important acharya in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. After Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his immediate associates departed, many unscrupulous people claiming to be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced many unauthorized philosophies and indulged in various degraded activities in the name of being followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And for about 200 years, these deviant groups flourished, and they exploited the religious sentiments of the people who were more or less ignorant of real spiritual truth, to the point that the designation Vaishnav became synonymous with degraded, debauched people who were dressing as Vaishnavs and calling themselves Vaishnavs. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he revived the true teachings and practices of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he pointed out all of the different deviant groups and explained their fallacies, and as a result he had many enemies. Apart from the deviant Vaishnav groups, or so-called Vaishnav groups, there were the caste Goswamis, who really didn't particularly get along with the deviant Vaishnav groups. But they were in their own way trying to exercise some domination over the spiritual lives of the people, again exploiting them for their own benefit, by and large. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur spoke very openly about these deviant groups, so that innocent people would be warned and saved from being exploited and misled by them. At that time, there was still the authority of the scriptures was still considered the ultimate authority, and so many debates arose over what is a Brahmin, for example, you know, what were Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's actual teachings, what are the real practices of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote articles, he had a regular journal that he published, and he wrote many books. He was a prodigious writer. He was brilliant, extremely qualified. He rose to the position of magistrate or assistant magistrate, which in the British rule was the highest position that an Indian could hold, and very few of them did hold that position. He was posted in Jagannath Puri, and so he was the superintendent of the Jagannath Temple as part of his duties. There were different imitators. There was one Bhishiksheda. He had some mystic powers, and he claimed to be Vishnu or Krishna, and he would entice ladies and have rasa dance with them. And so some of the more intelligent people complained to the British rulers. And the British, you know, were very diplomatic, and they could understand that this was a proper case to refer to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he would know how to deal with it. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur visited the place of the yogi, and, you know, spoke very pleasingly, and saying that, you know, you are such a great devotee, why don't you come to Jagannath Puri? Why are you in this remote region? Why don't you come to Jagannath Puri and worship Lord Jagannath? And the yogi, you know, was very belligerent, very agitated, and said, "Oh, Jagannath is just a piece of wood. Why should I go and worship a piece of wood, myself and Vishnu?" So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had him arrested. I mean, he tried different things, the yogi, Bhishiksheni, he tried different things, flattery, threats, and he said, you know, if you support me, I will make you the king of India, and different things. But anyway, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had him arrested and brought to Puri and put in jail. And the Thakur and his entire family became very ill. They were afflicted by high fevers, and it looked like they were going to die. Friends and well-wishers advised him, let him go. It's not worth losing your life and the lives of your family members. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not budge in his determination. finally the day of the trial came, and Dishikshen was brought into the courtroom. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was presiding, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur ordered that his long hairs be cut. Yogis are able to somehow conserve their strength in their long hair. Even in the Bible, there's the story of Samson, who has long hair and is very powerful, but when his hair was cut, he lost his power. So some constables came forward, and he made sparks come out, and they were all terrified. They were already afraid because they saw how sick Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his family had become. Then Thakur Bhaktivinoda, although he was the judge presiding in the proceedings, he came down and he personally cut the yogi's hair. So the yogi was sentenced, and you know, with a lot of drama, put in jail, and eventually he gave up his life in the jail, leaving a note that actually he was a pretender. There were other instances. There was a tree that was haunted by a ghost that was creating a lot of disturbance, and people were afraid even to go near the tree because the ghost was so active and delicious. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur went and read Srimad Bhagavatam. And after 24 hours or whatever it was, the tree cracked and that ghost disappeared and never came back. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur commented that the ghost was a Brahma Rakshasa, had been a Brahmin in his last life, who had been a pujari in the temple there. But he had been very offensive, although he had been a Brahmin and a Vaishnav, and dressed like a Vaishnav, and was chanting the holy names. But he was very offensive. He was actually just adopting the guise of a Brahmin, of a pujari. And he actually didn't have faith in the deity or in the holy name. He was just doing it as a business. And so as a result, he took birth as a Brahma Rakshas, it was a terrible punishment for the pujari, but in his own anguish, you know, he created very fearful situation for others. No one could deal with him, but again, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so staunch and so powerful spiritually that he was able to dispatch the ghost. Much of the present Krishna consciousness movement comes from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He had so many programs. Now I'm hot to developing Mayapur. I mean, each of his programs is worthy of a discourse, description or discussion. Mayapur, actually after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, various caste Goswamis had claimed that the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Kuliagram, the present Navadvip town, and they had their shrines there connected with different pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that they claimed had taken place there. And they were doing their business, I mean, doing business, making money. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur did not believe that that was actually the birthplace. And he studied old maps and consulted local villagers in Mayapur, and eventually found a mound that was that had tulsi plants growing out of it very luxuriantly. And he and there was an effulgence. And cow used to come there regularly, and he thought this is the place. Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Shiksha Guru, he came. He was very old, about 140. And he was carried in a basket. He had a servant named Bihari. Bihari Lal was very strong. And he carried him, and without saying anything, when they got to the site, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj himself felt the place, and he spontaneously jumped out of his basket and began to dance in ecstasy. And so it became a very major concern of Bhaktivinoda Thakur to develop Mayapur. He made a beginning with, he actually found the birthplace, the neem tree, and made a beginning, and his son, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, went further in developing Mayapur, and then Srila Prabhupada still further. I'll come now to his disappearance pastime, which is very mysterious and has some confidential elements to it. And I will read about it from this book, Srivati Siddhanta Vaibhav, because it includes, the account here includes Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's discussion of the confidential meaning of the whole pastime, which I would like to read verbatim. While composing Swaniyama Dvadasakam at Godrum in 1910, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur suddenly became so severely paralyzed that he could neither speak nor move. although actually he was in samadhi, and occasionally returned to external consciousness at will. His family members took him to Calcutta for treatment, but to no avail. The condition endured for some months, and it appeared that the August Thakur was about to expire. Pleased at this prospect, certain envious persons, and as we discussed, he criticized or attacked many false groups and people who made false claims. Pleased at this prospect, certain envious persons propagated that Bhakti Vinod was now reaping due karmic reaction. Pained that the purely spiritual pastimes of a Mahabhagavat were being likened to the sufferings of ordinary jivas enslaved by the material energy, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati implored at Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's bedside, "Please remain with us for some more days to further propagate the gospel of Sriman Mahaprabhu, thereby uplifting the universe. In this way, even these ignorant villains who are now criticizing you may also be benefited." I should mention that Srila Saraswati Thakur, although the author of this book and Vaishnavas in general refer to Bhaktivinoda Thakur as his father, or Srila Saraswati Thakur as Bhaktivinoda Thakur's son. But Srila Saraswati Thakur never regarded his father in a mundane way. He always regarded him as an empowered acharya, a pure devotee, and served him in the mood of a disciple. So after making this appeal, thenceforth Thakur Bhakti Vinod gradually regained full locomotion, leading many of his detractors to repent and submit at his lotus feet. While enacting this lila of sickness, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was requested by Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji via a caste Goswami not to remain in Calcutta, but to join him in Navadvip, because, quote, "Calcutta is the place of Kali." On hearing this, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur asked the messenger to convey his blessings to Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who was a Shiksha disciple of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, convey his blessings to Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji for Hari Bhajan, and relay the comment, "Where I reside is not the resort of Kali." Sri Siddhanta Saraswati then explained to that Goswami, "Srila Narottam Das Thakur has affirmed, Yatha Vaishnavagan say Stana Vrindava. Wherever Vaishnavas are present is Vrindavan." most people, this is Saraswati Thakur speaking to the Kass Goswami messenger, most people who approach Babaji Maharaj do so with their own ideas. They make a show of taking sadhu sangha, but are actually unwilling to accept beneficial instruction. Babaji Maharaj reciprocates according to their materialistic outlook and speaks in a manner to cheat them as per their desire. Only to one who approaches him in full surrender does Babaji Maharaj open his heart and reveal the truth. This is quite common, quite natural, that if a materialistic person approaches a saintly person, the saintly person will act in a way to please the materialistic person's ego and senses and mind. But he's actually cheating the person of the real benefit that the person could get from him if he were to open his heart and reveal the truths of Krishna consciousness. And Babaji Maharaj was like that. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj was like that. People would come. I mean, sometimes he was stern with them and spoke the truth. But most of the time he just didn't want to be bothered. And in any case, they weren't there for spiritual truth, and he didn't give it to them. Later, Srila Saraswati Thakur revealed the inner meaning of this pastime. Quote, toward the end of his manifest pastime, upon seeing the dearth of bhakti in society, he adopted a vow of silence and remained immersed in manasi seva, devotional service performed in meditation. Those fools who in pride considered themselves devotees could not understand this pastime and thus made offenses at the feet of a devotee. Wanting to see a devotee by their own feeble qualifications, they inevitably committed offenses, shedding profuse tears on seeing the distress of souls suffering in the world. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ordered me to preach Shuddha Bhakti to fulfill the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and for now to follow the tenets of devotional service. In 1913, 3 years later, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent a requisition from Calcutta to Sri Siddhanta Saraswati in Mayapur. There are not enough devotees here. I have heard that you have many there. So from among them, send 2 men. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati acceded, but one of the dispatched men sent the other elsewhere and arrived alone in Calcutta, where for some days he served Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Shortly thereafter, Srila Bhakti Vinod wrote again to Sri Siddhanta Saraswati, stating, "You are my only true Vaishnava son. Quickly free me from this association here and take me to Godroom." Sri Siddhanta Saraswati soon arrived in Bhakti Bhavan, but was prevented from taking Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur due to other family members' objections concerning the aged patriarch's health. Thus, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was obliged to return alone. Yet upon reaching the train station in Calcutta, he was met by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had arrived by car, accompanied by the same relatives who had forbidden him to go, but finally yielded to his insistence. During this period, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was composing Anubhasya and regularly sent, that was his commentary on Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And regularly sending drafts to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur for checking. This endeavor much pleased Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who became especially delighted upon perusing Sri Siddhanta Saraswati's comments on Chaitanya Charitamrita 1.1.19. A Tina Thakur up to Tina Mora Natha. Well, that's Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur left this world from Bhakti Bhavan on 23rd June 1914. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was then in Mayapur. Although earlier that day he had received news by telegram that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's impending departure, because trains were delayed due to monsoon rains and flooding, he did not reach Calcutta till almost 8 in the evening, a few hours after the Thakur's passing. In the meantime, his other brothers had performed a cremation ceremony. Now, in Vedic tradition, the body of a Paramahamsa is not burned, but placed in a samadhi and worshipped. Anyway, in the meantime, his other brothers had performed a cremation ceremony. Arriving amid sobbing and wailing, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati found his mother calm and composed, exhibiting no outward signs of grief. Wanting to placate her with meaningful words, he said, quote, "Today is one of great happiness and not the slightest grief. Today our Master has re-entered the eternal pastimes of the Lord. Now it is our duty to remember his eternal position, name, qualities, form, and pastimes. Henceforth, we will follow in his footsteps even more concentratedly." End quote. That was what Srila Saraswati Thakur said to his mother, who was also a pure devotee. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati's mother responded, "He departed after offering you plenteous blessings. He repeatedly mentioned your firm faith in Shuddha Bhakti and instructed that you should serve Sri Mayapur and propagate the message of Sriman Mahaprabhu." Sri Siddhanta Saraswati next addressed the gathering of Srila Bhakti Vinod's kinfolk and followers, describing the Thakur's transcendental qualities until deep into the night. He substantiated that obsequies for a Vaishnav must be executed in conformance to Vaishnav directions as given in Hari Bhakti Vilas and Sat Kriya Sara Deepika, rather than by Smarta rites. Because the family members were pretty mundane, and they were, like many Hindu families, they were absorbed in or entrapped in or influenced by their traditions. And at that time, the Smartas, didn't even speak about the Smartas. At that time, the Smartas were very influential, and so, you know, the family members thought, well, we, you know, we have to follow the Smarta rules, that's the proper way to do things. But Srila Saraswati Thakur said, no, they should follow the Vaishnav directions and Hari Bhakti Vilas and Sat Kriya Sara Deepika. On 27th December 1914, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati established a Pushpa Samadhi at Swananda Sukada Kunj. In Swananda Sukada Kunj is the place across the river in Godrum where Bhaktivinoda Thakur had his home and Bhajan Kuchir. In honor of this most exalted Vaishnav within centuries, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati held a 3-day remembrance festival there. Then, on 4th September 1915, the day of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur's Avir Bhav Chiti, in conjunction with the Bhakti Vinod Memorial Committee, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati organized the first annual public meeting in honor of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur at the prestigious Mangia Sahitya Parishad Hall, situated close to Ultadungi Road. Several of the most distinguished intellectuals of Bengal attended and glorified the contributions and personality of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So, I mean, we cannot really appreciate our debt to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. If we take up his instructions and missions, we can begin to appreciate it. And I think that's the basic instruction that we should take from his life and precepts. And that is that we should really enter deeply into his teachings and desires. Otherwise, we are like people trying to taste honey by licking the outside of the bottle. The honey is there in the bottle, but if you lick the outside of the bottle, you will not taste the honey. So entering the bottle really means giving yourself to the process. Then you can get a sense of, you know, who Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was and what his contribution to us is. You can see Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many children. I believe he had 9 sons and 4 daughters. He had married at a young age. His wife, first wife, was married at a younger age. But she died very soon, and so he remarried. But altogether, he had, I think, 13 children. Some of them remained celibate, like Srila Saraswati Thakur. But only Srila Saraswati Thakur really went deep into the teachings and practices. And so he could understand who Bhaktivinoda Thakur was and what he wanted. As the Acharya Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had to respond to different circumstances than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he did things that superficially appeared different to what Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had many loyal and learned and intelligent followers. And one of them approached Saraswati Thakur, and he basically went point by point over different areas in which he felt Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had deviated or departed from the path of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati replied point by point. But even among some of the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there was a perception or misperception, misapprehension, that Srila Saraswati Thakur was not following Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in some respects. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote an essay entitled Understanding Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in the essay, he writes that all of the Thakur's writings tell us that we should take shelter of and guidance from a pure devotee, a realized soul, a guru. And the scriptures say the same thing. And so to try to follow Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teachings without accepting the guidance of a self-realized teacher will not yield the result. In fact, the self-realized soul that they should have approached to understand Bhaktivinoda Thakur was him. Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, though he didn't say so in so many words. And that is how Parampara works. We understand our predecessor acharyas from our immediate. We understand Śrīla Saraswati. Well, it's a transparent chain. So in one sense, you know, one could say we understand Śrīla Saraswati Thakur from our Śrīla Prabhupāda, and we understand Śrīla Bhaktivinoda Thakur from Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Although because of the transparency, we understand everyone through Śrīla Prabhupāda. We understand Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Six Goswamis, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we understand the whole parampara. But yes, one has to make the effort. One has to spend the time. Like once Gaurijan Prabhu said to me, becoming Krishna conscious takes time. I thought he meant it takes time, like, you know, it's a gradual process. It's like, preparing a feast takes time. But what he meant was that you have to devote time to it. You have to devote time to it. And one activity is chanting, but another equally important, well, companion activity, is reading or hearing. And that takes time. But the more you do, the more the message sinks in, the more it enters your heart, and the more you become purified by the process of hearing or reading. But it takes time. If you don't put in the time, you won't get the result. Your efforts, you'll be sort of crippled in your efforts. You might be moving along, but in a sort of crippled way, because you're not getting the full support you need from the different elements that the acharyas have given us. And of course, the main are chanting and hearing, but also worshipping the deity. Again, according to Shastra, these are all very potent processes. And associating with devotees. I have a weekly Skype call with His Holiness Giridhari Swami. And sometimes, you know, I think, oh, I didn't have to take the call. I could go for my walk or stay on my walk later or do something else.
some other service.
But actually, my talks with him are extremely beneficial. So many times things come up that I didn't expect and that he didn't expect. And that type of association is very, you know, nourishing and enriching. And I've heard people in mainly Indian families say that they make it a point of phoning their mother or their siblings once a day, even if it's only for a few minutes, just to keep alive that relationship, to keep that relationship vital. And I can see how that could work. I mean, that depending on how spiritually advanced the family members are, it would be, you know, more or less spiritually beneficial. But with godbrothers, I mean, advanced godbrothers, it's very spiritually beneficial. And having that regulation. So I spoke with Burijan Prabhu last night, and I said, I think I'd like to do that, you know, like have like once a week that we speak, and same with Rutatvati Swami. And it's amazing what comes out of that. But you have to, you know, make the effort. You have to dedicate the time to it and be regular. Now, okay, someone can say you're a sannyasi, you know, you have that luxury, we have to work, we have to earn money, we have to pay the bills, we have so many other obligations. And that is true. That is true to some extent. But how much time is spent in other activities that are not necessary, and maybe not so worthwhile? In the morning, I usually listen to Srila Prabhupada singing bhajan, and then the commentary on the bhajan. But that's the idea, that we have to train our minds. It's there in so many songs.